We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall never surrender until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of people.
In times of universal deceit, truth is the only rebellion left. On today's show, we talk about the Equality Act. Joe Biden has said it's one of the first things he will sign into law, and Kamala Harris supports it without equivocation, without question. Why should you care, and why is it a bad idea? How is it antithetical, the exact opposite of biblical justice and biblical equality? I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. Welcome to today's edition of The Rebellion. Today, our focus is going to be on social justice versus biblical justice and the Equality Act and the common thread between these three ideas: social justice, biblical justice, and the Equality Act. The reason we will cover it is because it is one of the most important issues before us as we go into the final stretch to the November 3rd election. Because Joe Biden has said it will be one of the first things he will sign into law. Nancy Pelosi has championed it and tried to get it passed through the House already and the Senate. Donald Trump has stood in the way, his administration has stood in the way, and the Republican Senate has stood in the way, and the Republican House members, by and large, have stood in the way, and for good reason. Now, you might be asking yourself, why should conservatives stand against an Equality Act? Isn't equality a good thing? Why shouldn't we be defending it and supporting it? Equal justice for all, right? Well, I'm going to answer the question as to why that's a misnomer and why they're using language to deceive you. I'm also going to suggest that this is one of the most important issues before us right now, because if the Equality Act is signed into law, you will lose your religious freedom. Period. You will lose your religious freedom, and I'll explain to you why. Before we get into that, remember that you can subscribe to The Rebellion by going to patreon.com/Dr. Everett Piper. patreon.com/DREVERETTPIPER. Please do so, and please do this. Go to The Rebellion on my website, DrEverettPiper.com, and download your favorite episodes, because when you do, it helps the algorithms with regard to SoundCloud and Apple and whatnot, so that it bumps The Rebellion up in the rankings, and it gives us a bigger platform, gives us more listeners. So if you like The Rebellion, you like what we're saying, you like the conversation, you like the ideas, you're challenged by anything and everything, or at least some of what's being said, please do that. Go to my website, DrEverettPiper.com, and download your favorite issues of The Rebellion, episodes of The Rebellion, and encourage your friends to do the same. And that will bump the algorithms up for us. Okay, back to today's show. The Equality Act and social justice. Biblical justice. What's the difference? What's the difference between social justice and biblical justice? And why does this have anything to do with the upcoming election? And why should you care? First, biblical justice versus social justice. And after we get done discussing that, we'll take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the Equality Act and how it serves as a pretext, a foundation, the point of the spear in the debate between what is biblically defined justice versus that which is defined by society, social justice. My pastor, James Bizadecki, just this past week posted a meme, and he basically, in a very simple way, educated everybody on the difference between biblical justice and social justice. Essentially, the meme says this. On the left, it's biblical justice, and it's defined as conformity to God's moral standard as revealed in the Ten Commandments and the royal law, love your neighbor as yourself. Communitive justice, living in right relationship with God and others in community, if you will, giving people their due as image bearers of God. distributive justice. This is all under biblical, by the way. So you've got biblical justice, conformity to God's moral standard as revealed in the Ten Commandments and the moral law, the royal law, love your neighbor as yourself. Communitive justice, living in right relationship with God and others, and giving other people, because they're image bearers of God, their imago Dei, just like you, their due, treating them that way. Distributive justice, impartiality, rendering judgment in an impartial way, righting wrongs and meting out punishment for lawbreakers, reserved for God and God-ordained authorities, including parents in the home, elders in the church, teachers in the school, and civil authorities in the state. That's biblical justice. That's on the biblical side. On the social justice side of this meme is this: deconstructing traditional systems and structures deemed to be oppressive, and redistributing power and resources from oppressors to the oppressed or the victims in the pursuit of equality, not of the individual, but of outcome. You get that? So basically what you've got is biblical justice is defined by God, the Ten Commandments. As I've said before, God gave us 10 simple laws, and those were the parameters for justice. All we needed to do was obey the 10 simple laws of God, and we would have more freedom, obviously, than we would have if we started adding to all of those laws. Whereas today, we've got thousands and thousands, reams upon reams of little laws that have rushed in to replace the 10 simple laws because we refused to allow those laws to be the parameters of justice. And we then started constructing our own social definition of what is just, and deconstructing the traditional system, the traditional laws, the traditional structures, because we think that's antiquated, outdated, and oppressive. And then we redistribute power. Power is the context for social justice rather than the principles of God. Make sense? So you've got biblical justice defined by God and the Bible, social justice, which is defined by society and man. One gives us freedom, the other is totally predicated on power. There's a huge difference. There's a world of difference between biblical justice and social justice, and understanding this difference makes all the difference in the world. One, biblical, is defined by God, and the other, social, is defined by man. One submits to God's standards, the other supplants them. One worships the creator, the other worships the created. One is based on virtue, the other is fueled by vengeance. One is anchored in the eternal principles, and the other is built on temporal power and its redistribution. In other words, one is just, and the other simply is not. Now, here's the thing. Any church or any college or any country, any community that talks about social justice is at best, in my view, deluded. Every Christian and every conservative, even if you haven't embraced entirely the Christian faith, every individual that believes in human dignity and human freedom must understand that justice is defined by our sovereign, i.e. God, natural law, the laws of nature and nature's God. Justice is defined by our sovereign and not by society. Justice, Lady Justice, never tips the scales. Lady Justice never lifts the blindfold. Lady Justice never looks at color or class. Justice always attends to the facts, and she cares little about your feelings. Lady Justice knows that there must be a measuring rod outside of those things being measured, or you can do no measuring. Again, C.S. Lewis. And Lady Justice, real justice, understands that that measurement, that measuring rod outside of those things being measured, is God, your creator, not government or the created. The prophet Micah told us that God has told you, O man, what is good and what he, the Lord, requires of you. And here it is. to seek justice and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. Micah understood that justice could only be attained, could only be achieved if you seek it while you're walking humbly with God, and you never get justice if you supplant your sovereign and claim to be the author and the definer of everything that he used to define for you. When you rise up and declare yourself to be as God, when you deconstruct and tear down the traditional systems and structures deemed to be oppressive in your mind, and you think justice is all about redistributing power and resources from the oppressors to the victims, to the oppressed, when your goal is equality of outcome rather than the equality of the imago Dei, the equality of the individual, when you start looking at class and color rather than character and the content of heart and soul, you are not going to end up with anything that's just. You're going to end up with politics and power and privilege. You're going to end up with stuff like Nicole Hannah-Jones, when she says, white people are barbaric. They're bloodsuckers in our community. And what is her solution? To redistribute the power from one group of people because they don't have the right color of skin to another group of people who, in her view, not God's view, her view, are the right color. Is that just? Is that just? Is that equality? The answer is no. Clearly no. So the difference between biblical justice and social justice should be very important to you as you get ready to vote, because if you elect a party, if you appoint a government by virtue of your ballot that believes social justice is going to drive the narrative and drive our culture and be the law of the land, you just voted to give up your dignity. You just voted to give up your constitutional rights. And foremost among those rights is your right to religious freedom. And I'm going to explain to you why after we take a break and talk to you about the Equality Act. I'm Dr. Everett Piper. We're going to pause right now for a couple minutes and acknowledge our sponsors. This is The Rebellion, and we'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to The Rebellion. First half of the show, I tried to paint you a picture that shows you the clear difference between justice that is defined by God versus justice that is defined by government, justice that is defined by our Creator versus justice that is contrived by the created. And I'm trying to get you to understand, I'm trying to, in very quick terms, very quick show here, show you that one leads to liberty and the other leads to bondage. It leads to power, and it leads to you being oppressed by the redistribution of that power into the hands of those that think they should be the powerful. One is hierarchical, top-down. We will tell you how to live, and we will tell you what justice is and what justice isn't. And the other is covenantal. Ten Commandments are covenantal. The Constitution is covenantal. The Magna Carta was covenantal. Covenants, as Oz Guinness told us, always lend themselves to freedom, whereas hierarchy's always been toward power. Social justice is hierarchical by definition. It's the deconstruction by the hierarchy of current systems, and then somebody rebuilds new systems by redistributing the things that they just tore apart. That's hierarchical by definition. The covenant is grounded in those things that are immutable, those self-evident truths that are endowed to us by our Creator, natural law. Okay, what does this have to do with the Equality Act? Well, let me tell you a story. When I was the president of a Wesleyan college, I was invited to a conference in Florida, and the topic at this conference for Wesleyan pastors and Wesleyan college presidents was the Equality Act, and the Wesleyan Church was supporting it. So they had an agenda where they brought in a speaker, actually more than one, to tell everybody, hundreds of people, hundreds of Wesleyan pastors and hundreds of Wesleyan district superintendents, as well as all of the Wesleyan College presidents, why the Equality Act was a good thing for the church and for Christian education. I disagreed. I was the one college president who said, this is not a good idea. And the reason I disagreed is because I had been fighting these battles in the Supreme Court with regard to religious freedom. And I knew that the Equality Act would compromise that. And it was interesting. I wasn't standing alone. The Alliance Defending Freedom, which is the legal organization that has more wins before the Supreme Court in the last decade than any other law firm. The Alliance Defending Freedom, which had represented us in some of our lawsuits against the Obama administration, Health and Human Services, the Department of Education, the Office of Civil Rights, because they were compromising our religious liberties, the Alliance Defending Freedom was staunchly opposed to the Equality Act because they understood what I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to tell you why. It's going to end up compromising your religious liberties. It's not going to enhance them. Well, the Wesleyan Church disagreed, and the college presidents, other than myself, disagreed with ADF. And when I tried to get ADF to be part of the program directors of the Wesleyan Church would not even allow me to bring them in. No contrary opinion and view was welcome. They could not come in, even though this law firm, ADF, has more victories in the Supreme Court than any other law firm in the United States in recent years. The church would not allow them to come in and express their views because it was unwelcome. They'd already made up their mind. We're all in for the Equality Act because it's godly. Baloney. Well, just this last week, the president of Houghton College, a Wesleyan school, Shirley Mullen is her name, she issued a long missive on why the middle way is the Wesleyan way, a way of grace, graciousness, kindness, embracing the Equality Act, which by definition also embraces the LGBTQ nomenclature of human identity being defined by human inclinations. In other words, you are defined by your desires. Whatever your passions are, that's your personhood. So if you have an inclination sexually, that is what defines you as an individual. So if you're inclined to homosexual, LGBTQ, XYZ behavior, then that's who you are. And if that's who you are, you should be treated equally in society to those that are inclined toward heterosexual behavior, i.e. traditional biblical behavior. Well, Shirley Mullen issued a missive embracing the LGBTQ labels and nomenclature, LGBTQ identity. And just yesterday, David Wright, the president of IWU, Indiana Wesleyan University, did the exact same thing. Repeatedly used the words, our gay students, our LGBTQ students, and how he was calling for a commission to sit at the table, to talk, and to be taught by these students that feel hurt and offended as a result of being part of a traditional Christian community. Here's what's wrong with all of that. Once you grant, I'm going to be very clear here, once you concede the ontological ground, what's ontological? Remember, it's reality. Is it real? It's the discussion of those things that are real. Once you concede the ontological ground, the reality of LGBTQ identity, which Dr. Wright and Shirley Mullen do and did repeatedly, once you concede that ground, you're also conceding the moral ground that comes with that identity that you just conceded. Does that make sense? In other words, another way to say it is, if you grant a certain group of people minority status, you cannot then turn around and deny those same people the moral right to behave in a manner consistent with the status that you just granted them. So if you're going to say your identity is XYZ, then you no longer have the legal, logical, or moral right to tell those people who you just said have this legal minority identity. You don't have the right to then turn around and deny them the right to behave in accordance with the identity that you just said was real. an ontological fact. Once you concede that high ground of human identity, you can no longer tell people that they can't behave that way. It would be like telling somebody, well, your identity is that you're white, but you can't act like a white person. Or your identity is that you're African-American, but you can't act like an African-American. Or your identity is that you're a woman, but you can't act like a woman. Does this make sense? Identity is the context for your legal status in culture. And once you grant minority status, then you have to grant minority rights. You can't keep withholding them. And the Equality Act lies to everybody by suggesting that you can. Well, you can't. Dr. Wright and Dr. Mullen at Indiana Wesleyan and at Houghton College, they're dumbing down the definition of the human being to nothing more than the sum total of human desires. In their way of thinking, human identity is one and the same with human inclinations. This is extremely unbiblical, and it's not even logical, and it won't work legally either. To make my point, let's go back and just consider what Dr. Wright says and Shirley Mullen say about their gay students and their LGBTQ students, and just replace gay and LGBTQ with lying and adulterous students. And then as you go through and listen to their exact same speeches, change nothing else other than gay and LGBTQ to lying and adulterous. And then talk about the lying and adulterous community, the lying and adulterous students, and how they feel hurt and offended because people don't accept and respect their identity as lying and adulterous people. And therefore, we're going to sit at the table with the lying and adulterous students, and we're going to have a discussion, a talk with those that feel that they were created to be lying and adulterous human beings. And we're going to be taught by these lying and adulterous students on how we can make them feel better and more welcome in our community. Does that sound asinine to you? It should. And here's the thing. If we were really stupid enough to go there and tell people just because you have an inclination to lie and just because you have an inclination towards adultery, to cheating on your spouse, that that is your human identity and we're going to grant you minority status because that is your inclination, that's who you are. You were born that way. And therefore, we're going to establish law that says nobody can discriminate against you because you're inclined to lie and because you're inclined to be adulterous. They can't discriminate and refuse you employment because of those inclinations. Where in the world would we be as a culture? Well, it's exactly where we are right now. Dr. Mullen and Dr. Wright are incredibly misguided, and I'm not the only one that thinks so. Alliance Defending Freedom is trying to tell them, but they will not listen because they have imbibed the Kool-Aid. The Kool-Aid of dumbing down the definition of a human being to nothing but what you're inclined to do. And the shame of it is this. The shame of it is this. As Christians, they should know better. They should know that none of us have to reconcile ourselves to the statement that we were born that way. I was born that way to lie, and so were you. I was born that way to deceive. I was born that way to be prideful. I was born that way. But that doesn't mean I have to be defined by my inclinations to lie, or my inclination to cheat, or my inclination to steal, or my inclination to do anything that's wrong. I can resist those inclinations and I can repent and confess them and I can be born again. The Christian message is a message of being born again, not conceding to the argument that you were born that way. Shame on any Christian that thinks that that is biblical, moral, or even logical. And it's a terrible legal precedent that will result in nothing other than you losing your religious right to say differently, and to hire differently, and to discipline your employees or even your own family members, your sons and daughters differently, to teach differently if you're a teacher, to preach differently if you're in the public square as a preacher. You will lose that right because you are going to then be guilty of a hate crime because you're expressing something that has just been made illegal, and that is, no, you're not defined by your desires. You're not defined by your libido. The gospel, the good news, the evangel says you're defined by your Lord, that you can become a new creation in Christ, that the old has died and passed away. That's what baptism represents. You go into the water and you die to self. You rise out of the water, alive again, born again as a new creation, something new. And all that old junk, your inclinations to lie, your inclinations to steal, your inclination to cheat, your inclination sexual, no matter what it is, does not define you, and that is not your minority status. That is an insult to the Imago Dei. You're the Imago Dei, you're not the Imago Dog. Now act like it and vote like it, or you're going to lose your freedom. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion.